In this episode of Ricky's Historical Tidbits, I share with you the story of a man who made his mark everywhere he went. Whether it was mining for gold, building a telegraph line across the country, constructing railroads, potentially inventing the Pony Express, and most notably, consul for the Chinese people in the United States. His name? Frederick A. B.
This is Ricky's Historical Tidbits Podcast, a show about the history of Northern California. Sure, people know about the mining, people know about 1849, and everybody knows the name James Marshall. But there's a lot more to talk about. Just the juicy history right here in NorCal alone. You ever heard of Snowshoe Thompson, J. Parker Whitney, Horatio Gates Livermore? The list could go on forever. And that's what this podcast is here to do. It's about preserving and showcasing the amazing history in NorCal. All the stories and entertainment right here. This is Ricky's Historical Tidbits Podcast. And this is Ricky Mortensen.
The sponsor for this episode is the California Tea House. One day, many, many years ago, in China, there was an emperor named Shennong. Shennong asked for some water to drink. The water, of course, was boiled to be safe for drinking. And when the servant came over and walked over to the emperor, a leaf happened to fall off a tree and jumped into a cup of hot water. The emperor saw that leaf was in the water and instead of being angry, smelled it, nodded in approval of its aroma. Shennong, then seeing the water begin to change color, then grabbed the leaf and swirled it around the cup, then removed the leaf and took a sip. And that is how tea was invented. Supposedly. There's a bunch of different stories on how tea could have been invented. What I do know, though, is that tea is delicious. I'm an herbal guy myself, but I'll drink some Earl Grey, or if I want to be fancy, I'll order a London Fog latte at a coffee shop. Support a small business right here in California by ordering your next box of tea from the California Tea House. Be sure to use my special link so I can get a kickback. Head on over to my website, rickyshistoricaltidbits.com, and click on sponsors.
You're listening to Ricky's Historical Tidbits Podcast. Here's your host, Ricky Mortensen.
The year was 1825. John Quincy Adams is the president. The Kansas tribe gave up their land that would go on to be known as the state of Kansas. The Erie Canal opened, and Frederick Alonzo B. was born. Frederick's parents were English immigrants to the New World, encouraging their children to do great things in the wonderful new place called America. This would come into play when Frederick was about 23 years old, when news from the West came that a place known as California was covered in gold. And soon, men, young and old, raced to California to make it rich. Frederick's older brother, Albert, left for California first, arriving in San Francisco in June. Then Frederick showed up in September. And by the way, Albert wrote a diary of his trip, which you can, if you have the time, you should really read. You should go to my website, rickyhistoricaltidbits.com, find this post, Frederick B., Mandarin of the Blue Button. Scroll down to where I say this, and there's a link for you to read that. Pretty interesting, if you have the time. It's really long. In the early years of the B brothers' time in Placerville, they were mostly miners, Albert having been the most successful, but even still, Frederick had an operation where he employed about 20 men to work. And here's an article describing Frederick's mining operation.
The present owner of one claim on Ledge Bar, F.A.B. Esquire, has succeeded in draining a deep hole, which has been abandoned as an impossibility. He commenced operations in July, having employed upwards of 20 Chinamen. In less than 2 months, the pumps were set in motion, and after 36 hours of incessant labor, he succeeded in draining the hole. In constructing a race, he has overcome almost insurmountable obstacles, having had to blast out a channel through a solid ledge of rock, a distance of 600 feet. He used 4,000 feet of lumber and fluming, a sandbar, which together with machinery tools, and was carried by hand a distance of 1 mile and a quarter down a steep mountain. His main dam is a splendid piece of workmanship, and miners should examine and profit by it. It is 12 feet in thickness, and an inner and outer stone wall filled in with gravel and capable of withstanding any ordinary freshet. Mr. B is reaping an abundant reward for his labor and perseverance. His claim has averaged him, since he got fairly to work, $250 a day, with a fair prospect of doing still better. He has plenty of ground, which, should the rains hold off until the latter part of November, he may be able to work out. He has 20 hands employed, and the work goes on day and night.
Now, Albert and Frederick ran a store together in Placerville, a basic grocery store. They sold all kinds of things, butter, food, tools, and even ice. Frederick also experimented with growing hops, which, if you didn't know, is used to make beer. Here is a quote from the newspaper.
"Placerville hops. We have before us a small branch cut from a hop vine in the garden of F.A.B. Esquire, which is a curiosity. The stem measures about 8 inches in length and contains 30 hops of enormous size, and apparently not yet arrived at their full growth. The root was planted by Mr. B in an experiment, and he is so well satisfied in the result that he is making preparations to plant a large field."
By the end of the 1850s, Frederick had begun a new career in the telegraph business. Telegraphs were the future, and Frederick's goal in the long term was to be able to send a message all the way to the other side of the country. But until then, telegraphs didn't even go from California to Nevada. The goal was to start a telegraph line in Placerville and have it go over the Sierra Nevada Mountains into Carson City and then up and over to Salt Lake City. And guess what? This was about the same time that Snowshoe Thompson had started his mail route, which, if you don't know about it, go and check out my episode number 2, about him. Within a few years, not only had the telegraph line been built from Placerville to Salt Lake City, but all the way to the eastern states, where the first transcontinental telegraph was sent to Abraham Lincoln from the state of California. It was October 25th, 1861, and this is what it said.
"In the temporary absence of the governor of the state, I am requested to send you the first message, which will be transmitted over the wires of the telegraph line which connect the Pacific with the Atlantic states. The people of California desire to congratulate you upon the completion of the great work. They believe that it will be the means of strengthening the attachment which both bind the East and West to the Union. And they desire, in this first message across the continent, to express their loyalty to that union, and their determination to stand by the government in this day of a trial. They regard that government with affection, and will adhere to it under all fortunes."
Now, the very next day after this, Albert B., which is Frederick's brother, sent his own transcontinental telegraph, and this is what he said.
"The Pacific Telegraph calls the Atlantic Cable."
And then the person on the receiving end replied,
"Your message received. The Atlantic Cable is not dead, but sleepeth. In due time, it will answer the call of the Pacific Telegraph."
Now, I mentioned it in the intro of this podcast, but it's worth mentioning that Frederick was listed among a bunch of other names behind something called the Central Overland California and Pikes Peak Express Company, which happened to be the parent company of the Pony Express. And it's interesting to note that the Pony Express was replaced by the telegraph. Once the task of the telegraph was done, Frederick moved on once again to another career, the railroad. For the next decade or so, Frederick would invest in multiple rail lines, continuing to move up in the world while the Civil War was being fought. His railroad days ended when he had to sue the San Francisco and Humboldt Bay Railroad. From there, he worked on trying to get a mail route to Australia, and that didn't really work out, but he did some stuff in Samoa, which seems to have been a part of the Australia mail route, which failed. By 1878, Frederick's new and last career in advocating for the Chinese in America came to be, and so he became consul for China. As consul, Frederick investigated instances of immigration, deportation, working conditions, and murders of the Chinese people in America. He would go to Congress and advocate on behalf of the Chinese people in the midst of the Chinese Exclusion Act, going on in front of Congress saying this:
"I believe that the immortal truths of the Declaration of Independence came from the same source with the Golden Rule and the Sermon on the Mount. As surely as the path on which our fathers entered 100 years ago led to safety, to strength, to glory, so surely will the path on which we now propose to enter brings us to shame, to weakness, and to peril."
Proving himself to be an honorable man, the Chinese emperor appointed him a Mandarin of the Blue Button, which is a very high honor. And this is what it means, coming from the newspaper.
"Colonel F.A.B., the Chinese consul in San Francisco, has recently been the recipient of well-deserved honors from the Chinese government. In all the difficulties that have occurred in the Chinese agitations here, Colonel B.'s official conduct has been such as to win the respect of those opposed to Chinese immigration, and the confidence and approval as well as the government he represents. The celestial government has created Colonel B. a Mandarin of the Blue Button, and his commission took effect on Monday last, the third instant. Coming as this honor does, as a recognition of efficient official service, it is an honor justly his due, and the newsletter congratulates him on his reception. There are 5 ancient orders of nobility in China, and their rank may be said to correspond to the English Duke, Marquis, Earl, Viscount, and Baron. This nobility has no prescriptive rights of government, and they do not, in consequence of their titles, form a governing class. The civil government of China is divided into 6 departments, the third of which, Li Bu, includes the diplomatic service to which Colonel B belongs. The principal officers of all these departments are Mandarins, and the honor is open to all of the world. The first 5 orders of the Mandarins, indicated by the color of the button, rank with the 5 orders of the ancient nobility. The blue button is the 4th, and therefore equivalent to the English title of Viscount. In this country, being the 3rd in rank in the civil service in China, the rank is equal to Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. There are about 15,000 Mandarins in the civil service of China. Their badge is a peacock's feather, and their rank is indicated by a color of the button worn in front of the cap. 3 years' service will entitle Colonel B to the red button, equivalent to the English title of Marquis, and this is the decoration of the chief minister of the diplomatic service. Colonel B is very popular with the capitalists and the middle class here, and we shall be very happy to see him wearing his official decoration."
Now, over the years, Chinese immigrants were often attacked and murdered. There have been plenty of massacres of them as well. Some of the most famous examples of anti-Chinese riots or massacres are, number one, the Rock Springs Massacre in Wyoming back in 1885. This is when the coal miners were going on strike, but the Chinese workers refused to go on strike. So the striking coal miners killed 28 Chinese men and then rioted into Chinatown, burning 78 homes. Then comes the Seattle riot of 1886, which wasn't very deadly, but the people of Seattle chased the Chinese out of town onto the docks and tried to herd them onto a ship to send them back to China. And then we've got the Hell's Canyon Massacre in 1887 in Oregon, which 34 miners got ambushed and killed. Frederick never stopped working on behalf of the Chinese, and even though he never saw the end of the anti-Chinese movement, he is honored today around the country, having B Street named after him in Sausalito, and being one of the quote-unquote miners featured in the new Miners on Main scavenger hunt down on Main Street in Placerville.
You've been listening to Ricky's Historical Tidbits Podcast. When you go to school and study history, they give you dates, they give you some names, and that's about it. But there's a lot more to California history, and that's where this show comes in. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show, and we hope you were entertained. And we'll be back soon, but in the meantime, hook up with us on Twitter and Instagram at @busy_Ricky. Find us on Facebook at Ricky's Historical Tidbits. Till next time, this is Ricky's Historical Tidbits Podcast, signing off.